wondering about that and you look on your, or look it up after June or say into August and it's not there, you can call me. I will welcome your calls, but most likely it's because they're backlogged of trying to get every, you know, to try and get your things in.
So what were our numbers that were, that attended in person and then that did it via?
We had about 100 remotely and 175 at the conference.
And how does
165.
It?
So I felt really good about the turnout and the enthusiasm of the remote and being able to set it up in different locations. I thought that was great, but the CLE reporting became a little bit of a challenge. So I don't want to do that to Sydney again.
Because generally our spring conference were at 300, right?
Yeah.
350 has been our lowest number.
So normally those people would just show up?
Normally everybody would just show up. And we do have a contract for the Sheridan next year. So that's in place, and it's the end of April. So those that are doing their presentations and the legislative update and those kinds of things, you'll have plenty of time to do that. So that's now in place going forward for next year. But I think if we do it, you know, going forward, I would just recommend that if we do it remotely, that those that are going to be in other locations, they're going to be totally self-study on their own.
Another thing that we learned is if we do it remotely, let's see, if you'll pass it on to Stephen, is that we try to coordinate with Chris Fielding from Post to broadcast, because he got, and has the expertise in doing that. Ron tried to do his best as he could, we bought some of his equipment, but not, just didn't have that expertise. But our preference is to not do remote broadcasts in the future unless we absolutely have to, and council tells us.
We're more than happy to film it.
Oh, right.
And make it available, soon after, or, you know, as close as we can after a conference. We've done that for civil.
Who used it the most? It seems like it would be advantageous for larger offices.
Right, yeah. So the AG's office, Salt Lake, Utah County. And then I was going to ask some of the folks down south, I know from Kane County, wanted to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I was looking at the number. Well, I was looking at those numbers, but I'm not sure. I came up from the city, and most of the guys and gals came from Washington County. I'm not sure that came up.
Right. For those that would, you know, off the Wasatch Front that would have traveled to the conference anyway, being in Logan didn't matter. They would have to travel to Salt Lake. So Logan was just another 2 hours, but it was the big counties. But by moving it back to Salt Lake, I think we're going to eliminate, you know, that problem.
For us, it was a huge because we would have to pay their travel as well as their room and board.
Exactly.
It went from like whatever $75 or $80 to almost $500 per person.
Right.
And that was a huge impact for us financially.
Sure. But you guys still get that advantage even just if it's recorded and your people watch it later?
Yeah. I guess. I mean that would be fine. I mean if we can work out the.
There's a cap though, isn't there? There's a cap for watching video.
Yeah. We're talking about if we do it live, you know, we appreciate Sim and Will, you know, their office letting us use their license for the what's it called? The program is.
But doesn't the bar treat those the same? The live video feed and watching a video later, aren't they saying
is it a technology issue with the
The technology issue is what it hampered us when we began.
Yeah.
But then what it was is because, you know, when you paid your CLE to watch it remotely, we were paying the cost to the bar. So you weren't your individual attorneys weren't having to pay that $10 self-study fee. And so that's where
that's what the bar charges us is the
remote or self-study
webinars or watching video.
Right.
So that's how they're treating it. They're treating even if it's live, they're treating it as part of that.
Sim, I'm looking at the rule. It's written so you absolutely cannot do it. I mean, you either have to be in the same room, the lawyer and the presenter, or it has to be from a courthouse to a courthouse, or a courthouse to the Law and Justice Center. Nothing else qualifies as live.
Maybe we need to approach the bar about that in this age of technology, that we ought to say, you know, that room needs to be modified, because that's...
Yeah, live streaming seems like it's reasonable now.
Yeah. So maybe
it would be just as interactive as sitting in the auditorium.
Would it be possible, maybe, what do you think? I guess here's my question. Would it be possible for us to approach the bar as UPC, saying that we do have a block of attorneys, we're going to take advantage of this, that to see if this is a reasonable request as they go to their bar conference in, where do they go, up in Aspen or wherever they go, and to see if that's a rule modification that they'd be willing to entertain, or what is the process that we can propose a rule modification to address this issue?
Yeah. Good idea.
Actually, we pay if we when we send it in, you know, it's up to $15. You know, so they're actually going to make more money if they go through us and let us do the remote as if you were there. They're actually going to financially come out better because the self study is only $10.
If they have to change the cap on that time though too. How many hours you can do self-study?
It's,
Or simply to say that if you're doing live stream, it doesn't fit into the AV kind of study that you do. Because to me, those are qualitatively different. You know, if somebody's actually taking the, if you're saying me being in this building is somehow makes it different than if I'm in that room next door and watching it live on the monitor, that seems to me that's what we need to change.
Yeah. Do you have the rule number up?
It's in the definitions of 14-402.
And that was my conversation with Sydney, was, okay, there's people watching it live, while the other people who are actually there watching the same thing happen at the same time in real time.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be a video. And she's, no. You got to be there or not.
And that's what the rule says.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a good idea. So we'll follow up and see what we can do. And it's like, like you said, it's time to come into the 21st century, 22nd century, or whatever we're at. So, okay.
So otherwise, if I understand it, we would just have to add an additional $15 so you don't get stuck with it. So I guess maybe one practical thing is that, let's say, so if you're saying that whatever the cost was going to be, I don't think that's fair for you to be burdened with that additional cost either. We should probably pick up that extra cost.
Well, that's included in the registration fee.
Yeah, we've included the fee.
That was all included in the registration fee.
In there.
Yeah, you know, which went towards the cost of putting on a conference.
Okay.
So I didn't want remote people to be, for you to be dinged an extra $10, which meant you were paying $85.
Yeah, but here's the difference. If the difference is between you having to pay an extra $15 versus an extra $400.
Right. I'm still trying to save you money, Sam.
It just might be the cost of business that I'm happy to walk away with an extra.
I think the bar may not want to go all live streaming from New York, from other states. But as long as we look, this is essentially a state agency, live streaming. Based on their statute anyway, and live stream from within the state to other locations in the state.
Yeah,
and that's. Yeah. It seems like they can make an accommodation for that.
Carved out an exception for judges. They're in a courthouse.
Imagine that.
You would think we're a regular customer, and we would have some kind of.
Technically, it's interactive as well, because I think we'll accept questions from a remote location, so that makes it.
We've done that before.
Interactive, and so that should help us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We've done that before with several conference.
Can I just quick note from the technical side? If we ever want to do a remote broadcast again, and we're going to be responsible, we'll do it. The only way to do it, the way to do it right, as I've looked at it, the way we did it was sort of worked, but had problems because of the lack of the proper equipment and the proper software. So if we're going to do it in the future, we need to look at what it costs to get the right equipment and the right software, or maybe Post could do it for us.
Because
they have a lot of stuff already capable of doing that we don't. So we had a mishmash of about three different things that I was unfamiliar with that I had to try to match together. And I was frustrated for you guys, but it was also crazy frustrating for me trying to make it work. So
when we move into our new building, we're going to have the new equipment, which will give us that capacity to be able to broadcast.
So if we're going to do it again, we need to talk about getting the right stuff to make it work smoothly, so that it's not such a pain for everybody on all both ends.
Post
late April becomes hard for Post because it always bumps up against governor's savings, and they're responsible for that, and that's why they couldn't help as much this year.
Right.
And so if we're both moving the conference to late April like we have been, Post may not be available to help us.
Good point.
They're willing to help us, but they have their
own. They just may not be available.
They're not available, so
Okay. Thank you. Good discussion. The legislative updates, as we started getting into that, is, again, appreciate everybody coming. The challenge that we had was just simply scheduling. Is it was scheduled late enough in the season that the jurisdictions that we visited in the beginning either didn't hear about it, or they didn't have enough time to get it on their training calendars. Marilyn and I are going to set the schedule at the beginning in January, so that it's out well in advance. And then we're going to reassess and see how many people we get in attendance. Utah County has traditionally, even last year, we only had two people that showed up. And how many did you guys have this year? Two or three?
Five.
Wow.
There was five there this year.
Was there five?
Yeah, because we had four last year, and I said we had an improvement of one person.
No, that was in Nephi.
No, because the one attorney from Orem showed up late, and that made it five.
Annalise?
No.
Typically, regional legislative update, I get a count, a full count, everybody, of about 740. I don't have this year's numbers in yet, so maybe at the next council meeting I'll be able to, you know, give you the numbers. But on an average, past years we've had an attendance statewide of 740. So we'll be interested to see what we did this year.
Which one was the largest?
The largest one I went to was Tooele, and they were just over 50.
50?
Yeah, but nobody else was over maybe 20.
You can do this.
Let's
like
see.
12 or 13.
I'm just trying to think. We had
no moment of counting after us. We didn't know about it.
We averaged 25 to 30 on the eastern side of the state. Anyway, so we'll, like I said, we are going to do a better job of scheduling it early next year, and again, we'll reassess next year when we get there. The upcoming conferences, I don't know that we really need to go into a lot of detail on that. We've got INPA coming up. We're finalizing it, BASIC, same. The expert witness training, Salt Lake is going to be the primary sponsor for this, so we're going to assist with that. This is going to be by invitation only. So it's not a conference for everyone. Just to remind you, this is where we want you to bring a prosecutor and a victim advocate or an officer that investigates the domestic violence, sexual assault. I'm not sure, I can't remember if Rich has narrowed it down, but the goal is to create expert witnesses that you can use and that can be used around the state. So be looking for that invitation to come from Rich. From Salt Lake. And then, of course, Fall and Civil. Also, Title III. Salt Lake is looking at sponsoring a Title III conference. They're looking sometime in October to be held in Salt Lake. We've got great resources. Let's see, that's on page two. I can see Greg and the others are looking at it. Is the tab references, or it references a tab, but I realize it's not on the UPC training calendar, so I'm just looking at my notes on page two. But the AG's office has got some great resources for Title III. Rich is looking at bringing in some experts from back east that have some experience. We're hoping to work with the U.S. Attorney's Office and tap into that bit. But my feeling is, and I think the training committee is the same, is it's great to have national resources and or, you know, federal resources, but really, when you have a state prosecutor, we want them to be able to call somebody here at the state that's working state issues. And so we're hoping that really is where we're gonna draw our expertise from, is from here in the state, recognizing though that not everybody you know, we may not have a vast resource in the counties. Like I said, I think the AG you have, but at least two.
We have two working.
Title three. Yeah, so.
All the times. And you talked to me too.
Yeah, I know Jeff has really been pushing wanting the Title III. Are you guys getting to be more expert, gaining more of that expertise that we can use?
Yeah.
Are they still kind of...
No, we're still doing them actively. We do 3 to 5 wires a year. I mean, just kind of depends.
Yeah, okay. But what Rich and I have told the U.S. Attorney's Office, if they end up co-sponsoring this, is we need them to address this on a state level, so that it's relevant for what our local people are doing. All right, UPAA, I think, is...
We just had our conference last week in Vernal. It was wonderful to go back up there again. We had 74 people in attendance, which I felt was really good for Vernal. Kathy, you want to...
Everyone had a great time. All of the presenters were wonderful. I see that you get Brody Young came, and he was amazing telling about his experience being shot and then finding the guy that shot him who had died. And then we also had some dogs. Uinta County came in with a couple of their dogs. And a Wasatch County fellow came in, Cameron, with his dog Earl, that sniffs out electronic devices in homes and stuff. And everyone had only positive things to say. It was great.
And Earl is URL.
URL is Earl, yeah. And he's going to be there. They were traveling because the show Cops called him and said, will you come film a show with us? So... hopefully we can find out when Earl and Cameron will be on Cops and find it.
Marilyn reported it last time. They call him also affectionately the porn dog. Mm-hmm.
They have found porn on the devices, on SD cards and stuff. We have three different types of dogs, Earl and what was the other one? Ace, he was the sniff drugs and things like that. And then there was the other dog, I don't know what his name was, but he's the one that would go and bite, would go after people and bite. So we couldn't pet him. One presentation that I was surprised about, I was a little bit ambivalent about it. They contacted me, was the Humane Society of the United States, that came out and talked about animal cruelty and the link between animal cruelty to domestic violence, and they called it The Link. And his was a 90-minute presentation filled with, and he tailored it to Utah law, and that was really fascinating of the different types of animal abuse, dog fights, cop fights, all different kinds of things, and how that is related to how people, how they treat their animals, to how they will treat other people and domestic violent crimes. His was very, very good. It was great. He brought two dogs as well.
The Salt Lake County Mayor. What was his name?
Miss Jane. One of them was Miss Jane. They were rescue dogs. So it was just kind of filled with dogs. And then we had Kevin Miller. He came and talked about how to deal with difficult people. And Elaine Hill spoke to us about why people do what they do. So that helps your assistants in your offices deal with people. And it's good knowledge to know why people do what they do. Why do we do what we do and why we do them. So that was really, really good. Bob gave an excellent legislative update. I think they said it was one of the best that they've had, so he did a good job. And Gavin Anderson talked about grandma. So it was very well received, and everybody had a good time. So
Gavin did his presentation just before the test that is done for those who haven't taken the test and want to, and some of what he said was actually on the test, so.
Yeah, that's the CUPA test, Certified Utah Prosecutorial Assistant Test. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the one that the county attorneys took last fall.
Yours was the abbreviated one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me feel any better.
Marilyn was suggesting, you know, as we're talking about the humane. Yeah, it might be a good time for them to take that to their planning committee, you know, because that animal abuse and connections to domestic violence. Brody Ranger Young is phenomenal. I'm thinking maybe we could bring him in as well. Kevin Miller, he was a leadership. Marilyn mentioned that he was talking about difficult, you know, dealing with difficult people. I know council and the county attorneys in the past have been interested in, you know, some leadership training. I attended a seminar sponsored by NAPC last year that I would love to bring to Utah, but Mr. Miller also does some leadership trainings, and he's expressed an interest to come and train if, you know, if there is an interest. And so that will be something that we can talk with the training committee about, if, you know, if you guys, ladies and gentlemen, are interested in that. So a good conference for them.
It was really good. Yeah. The Humane Society guy was a former prosecutor.
Oh, and he's a cheap date. That's what I was going to have him.
Yeah, he is a cheap date. Didn't cost us a dime. So, feds, you know, brought him in. And big animal lover. So, just that disclaimer is he was a big animal lover. And his passion is dogs and horses. So.
And he has local ties. He's from Idaho and has family in Utah, mm-hmm. and has local ties. So, we heard a lot about Utah.
And he brought along with him her name is Sundays Hunt. And she's Utah's director of the Humane Society, so she was there giving input as well. So it was pretty surprising. I was really impressed with it. I was kind of wondering how they were going to tailor it to us, but he did a good job.
All right.
So thanks for sending your assistance. They loved it.
Yeah, the reports I received, they were good. Mr. Tyson.
For my report?
Yes, sir.
I'll be brief. My detailed report is in the packet, so if you want to look and see everything that I have been doing, you can see it there. But the last, and you're probably getting a theme from UPC staff, but the last 2 months have been insanely busy. In addition to the legislative updates, I've done 14 of my own training sessions in the last 6 weeks. And so I have not had much time in my office, which is okay, but I think I bit off a little bit more than I could chew during that time, and so I will take that into consideration next year as people try to schedule me during this time period. But yeah, trained almost 500 people in the last probably 7 weeks in various different training sessions. Still getting lots of hits for technical assistance and requests for briefs and help on issues, which, you know, I enjoy doing the training, but I think that's probably the most helpful thing I can do is when a prosecutor has a question and they can reach out to me and I can and help them with that case. So things are going well. I've got my grant submitted. Haven't heard back on it, but it's as safe as grant money can be. So I'm not too worried about that. But all that's in and being processed by the Highway Safety Office. Should have a review of that sometime next month. But again, I'm not too worried about the grant money. I think it should come in. Shouldn't be any problems. Any questions for me?
Thanks, Tyson. SAVERS.
Yes. So I was hoping to get the job announcement open sooner rather than later, but because of space issues, it's probably better that it's going to be a little bit later. The job announcement should go out this week. We've gotten it signed up by all the appropriate signatures through the AG's hiring process. We'll leave it open for 2 weeks. My guess is it will close, depending upon, anyway, 2 weeks after it closes. You know, we're very specific in what, well, we said minimum of five, well, a preference of 5 to 8 years prosecuting trauma, sexual assault, domestic violence, but we didn't make that a requirement so that, you know, we can look at all potential candidates. The hiring committee will be, the AG's office has asked that either Greg or maybe Janice or somebody sit on that, which is great, so I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that yet. Probably myself, Donna, Sim's already agreed that Donna can come back over, she's agreed to that, and then we'll just be looking to the council to see if there's council members that would want to be involved with that. If you want to let me know now, or I will be looking for that to set up that interview panel and the interviews here early next week, or actually I'm going to try and do that tomorrow or after the 4th. So that's where we're at on that. I have no idea who will be interested. You know, of course, there's people around the state that we think might be interested, but it'll be interesting to see who ultimately applies. I'll have a big plate having to develop this training with Host and have 100% of the officers trained by July 1st of next year, so we need to get somebody up and running. Yes?
Ty Finch with the Utah Domestic Violence Coalition is putting together a training right now for police, prosecutors, and healthcare providers on strangulation, specific to domestic violence. I've told her that there is someone coming that might fit very closely into what they're looking to do. They're doing a training starting in August in St. George, and then they're going to rotate.
You said it's Ty Finch?
T-Y.
Yeah.
Finch.
And who is she with again?
UDVC, Utah Domestic Violence Coalition.
Okay, yeah, okay, good. Okay, so on that.
Let's go to the IT issues.
Unless Ron wants to say anything about PIMS, you know, it's going to be available. As I mentioned when I was going through the budget, we anticipate that we'll continue to get some PIMS user fees, but we're not developing it. And I mean, how much PIMS maintenance and stuff did you do this last quarter, Ron?
I should write that up. Like, but not a lot. I mean, it's been probably every week. It's pretty much every week something comes up with helping people with PIMS, but it's not a everyday occurrence. But it takes a few hours a week.
Okay, as I've announced.
I was going to say, I think you were going to say, I think that since the selection of Journal Technologies occurred, one of the things that I wanted to kind of raise was that since this really is going to become our statewide sort of system of most prosecution offices, it may not be a bad idea for at least this group here or some representative to reach out to the AOC about interface with their CORA system. The CORA system is antiquated. The court is thinking, I think, about upgrading it. I don't know what their timeline is in terms of as they go into this next legislative session. Because I know their priority is going to be on asking for judges in some of the different districts. But I think starting a dialogue with whoever the IT folks for the AOC are to start talking about building that interface is an important conversation to have as most prosecution offices move towards adopting journal technologies to do that. And I know that there's been some historical resistance from AOC about those interfaces, but I just wanted to bring that up as you sort of, as you guys have made that choice, that maybe right now might be a right time to really start that conversation.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay. So what I was going to say as we transition from PIMS to this new system is some of the really tiny jurisdictions where even where they're contract prosecuting are asking if PIMS is still going to be available because they don't really see them being able to make the switch to journal technologies. And my response has always been is that PIMS will be there for as long as the system can run it. You know, we're not actively developing anything, but that's the word I've been putting out to anybody that still wants to stay with PIMS. So here's where we are at. So since the last council meeting, the committee, again, thank you to them for the work that they did, went through the cost analysis and we ended up having to ask for two additional BAFOS best and final offers, asking for some additional information. And ultimately, it was determined that General Technologies